I want to share a story, brief story this morning. And it's a story about moving out into the country. And when Rebecca and I moved out into the country from the city, there's a lot that's different. And those of you that have lived out in the country or maybe in a little more of a rural area, you might have some indication. And some things you kind of mentally prepare yourself for, and other things you're not so sure about. You don't even know that you need to be prepared for it. One of those things that I wasn't really prepared for when we moved into the country was what a dark night really looks and feels like. You know, those, even when you go camping, like we got the chance to go last week, there's still a lot of light around. There's flashlights, there's campfires, there's all these things. But when you get into certain areas, you really can experience what being away from kind of the noise pollution of where we all live right now is like. Now, I have the pick that we've been using as sort of the opening of this series is this guy who's sort of looking up. And when you're out kind of in a really dark area, you know, it can be amazing to look up into the sky. You see it full of stars. All of the lights of the city are gone, and darkness can take on a new depth. And it really is amazing when you can see just the amazing world that we live in. But when those stars go away, or you don't have them, maybe it's a cloudy night, it can get dark, really dark. I have a picture of, and it's purposely dark. This is the road, or what should be a road, of where I used to live. This was an average night in February. It's dark. You can't see anything. In fact, the only light was from the flash of my camera as I took this picture. And I have to admit that the first time I went out and experienced that darkness, I was a little bit unsettled. I felt kind of like that kid, you know, how you feel when you're a kid and your nightlight doesn't work and you're a little scared of the dark. And I was secretly relieved that there happened to be one light outside. I have a picture of that one light. This was a light that I came to really love and rely on. It was this light on this outdoor pole. That's me. I've got a winter coat on. It's the middle of the night, and I went out and I took this picture. Yes, there is snow, but that's kind of irrelevant in this. That light is the only thing that provided light outside when all other lights were out. It was like that giant nightlight, or a nightlight that you have as a kid, and it just gives you that sense of comfort until it goes out. And one night, this light went out, and I have never been in more pitch black than ever before in my life. And I went outside in that darkness to see if I could quickly fix it, or maybe it was a blown fuse or something. And what happened when I walked out is the fear of that darkness just kind of seeped in. I was like, what am I, 8 again? And the shadows, you know, kind of seem like they're a little bit bigger and scarier. Sounds are louder. And you invariably will trip over something that hasn't moved in a long time. And you know that it's been there for a long time. And yet you forget it's there because you can't see anything. You are going out. And what normally you could see, you start to second guess. Where did it? That's that bench that has been sitting there for 5 years. It hasn't moved, but I forgot it was there because I couldn't see it. Where is that last step on the porch? And you kind of do this and you get out there. Even things that are normal get harder. Light and the ability to see because of it is something that can easily be taken for granted when it's not there. It's that experience after, say, a blackout, even in the city, when all the lights are out, and then you're kind of like rushing around trying to find, oh, where did I put the flashlight? Where are the candles? And then the lights suddenly come back on. And what's that moment like when the light comes back on? You're kind of that, you have that relieved feeling. It's just that moment where comfort, a sense of comfort. And then you go around trying to turn off all the lights that you turned on during the blackout. It's that moment. And when Jesus declares in John 8, I am the light of the world, it changes everything. You see, this verse just kind of pops out of the blue. We've been studying the Gospel of John, and he says, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Suddenly, everyone's minds are blown. He said, what? He is the light of the world? And in the midst of darkness that people of that day felt, suddenly there was a source of hope. This statement sets the stage for Jesus' sixth sign. This is the sixth out of seven that we're walking through this summer. And in John 8, this is a very foundational verse. This is one of our strongest statements that Jesus makes of his understanding of himself and his role. As each of these signs that we've been studying is revealed, what happens? Our understanding of Jesus grows and becomes brighter and clearer for us to see. And why does John do this? He does this to lead us to this purpose that he states so clearly in chapter 20, so that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. John is very explicit about his purpose for writing. All of these signs are more than just a show. They are meant to point us in the direction of believing that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. And that as we believe, or as you believe, you may have life in his name. The man in this story that we will read today has a profound experience of the healing and restorative power of Jesus. And as his story unfolds, we come to see that it's actually not one sign, but it is two signs. It is what I would like to call a double miracle of sight for this man. And at one level, there's this obvious miracle that we'll know about. And there's a less obvious, more deeper miracle at work. And my hope today is that this work of God will also speak to you and that you can begin to see yourself in this story. Because this is a journey that each of us must take. Every person, man, woman, child, male, female, young, old, will come to a point where you will have to make a decision. Am I going to walk in the light? Or am I going to continue to walk in the dark? Here's the big idea for us today, and I put it on the back of your bulletin. In this sign, we see this healing journey of this man from eyesight to insight. From eyesight to insight. Now, the obvious miracle is that Jesus restores, or I can't say even restores because this man was born blind, restores his eyesight. But the deeper miracle at play is the insight that this man gains that will lead him all the way to faith in Jesus Christ. That is the far greater miracle at work. The healing of his physical sight is the means that opens his eyes to that deeper spiritual insight. Whereas eyesight might be physically looking around with our eyes, or those funky little glasses your granddaughter had on this morning. You know, some of you know what that thing on the left is because you wear glasses or contacts, and they always say, you know, read this, the lowest line possible. That's eyesight. And when we don't have our sight, that's a problem. If you had sight and you have less sight now, it's not so great. You struggle a little bit more. But you will struggle forever if you are not led into insight into who God is and come to that decision point. Eyesight may be fleeting, but insight into God can be forever. Today we're going to highlight four steps of this growing spiritual insight that this man displays on his journey to faith in Jesus. And as we journey along with him, think about these two questions. Where does blindness remain in you? And secondly, where is your vision improving to see Jesus more clearly. And we'll kind of come back full circle to that at the end. Last week in John 6, we had our fifth sign, which was Jesus walking on the water. That was all the way back in chapter 6. And I want to encourage you, if you haven't done this in a while, read through chapter 7 and 8. They give a great context that sets up this sixth sign in John chapter 9. In this period, Jesus is back in Jerusalem. He's in town for one of the Jewish festivals, and he's hard at work. He is teaching people. He is getting into controversies with the Pharisees. They don't like him very much. And in chapter 7, they actually grow so hostile that they're trying to start to kill him. They want to kill him. And yet, time and again, it says that they could not lay hands on him because it was not yet his time. We don't know what that actually means other than they couldn't lay hands on him. They were not permitted to touch him. So after referring himself as the light of the world, we get to chapter 9. I'm going to read the first 12 verses for us right now. As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, teacher, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus. "But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." He says it again. Verse 6, after saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. "Go," he told him, "wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. That's the end of the first miracle. Let me continue on. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg?" Some claimed that he was. Others said, "No, he only looks like him." But he himself insisted, "I am the man." "How then were your eyes opened?" they asked. And he replied, "The man they called Jesus made some mud, put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed. And then I could see." I kind of imagine him saying it in that tone. "Where is this man?" they asked him. "I don't know," he said. And I'll stop there. It's kind of an interesting story. This is that first part of the miracle, or what we think of as the main sign, but I think the main sign is yet to come. This man gets his eyesight back. And at the very beginning, Jesus' disciples themselves, they actually say what a common idea was back then. Almost everybody believed it. Both his disciples, the Pharisees, even regular people. And it's a belief that has incorrectly persisted even today into the church. And it is this, that if something bad has happened to you, it's because you must have sinned. And there was even a further belief that even if this man's parents hadn't sinned, then this little baby inside the womb must have sinned, which is why this baby came out blind. That was the view of most people. And before we start shaking our heads in disbelief, that view persists today in the church, and it is wrong. Jesus' disciples assumed that sin was the cause of this man's blindness. Now, it is true that sins that we do or get ourselves into can cause problems in our life. We know that all too true. But in this case, he's saying, no, this man did nothing wrong. And his parents did nothing wrong either. I've often wondered why we do that. And there's probably a whole number of reasons why we do that. But I think fundamentally it's because we are much better at trying to pick out what's going on with other people and to judge them for that, to judge the circumstances of other people. But we're less willing to do that for ourselves, to hold ourselves. You know, we want to judge people harshly for what's going on in their life, but we don't really want to hold ourselves to that same standard. And it's those unbiblical thoughts that can easily enter our minds. We're not immune from it, such as, well, they probably deserved it. Or, my least favorite one, must not have enough faith. And we can easily believe that we're pretty good, or at least a little better than this guy, so my sins don't need to be punished. But Jesus, however, refuses to accept this view that most people had. In fact, he completely upends this. Instead, he says, this man's blindness is an opportunity to glorify God through a profound act of power. It's an amazing moment. He emphatically announces, while I am in the world, I am the light of the world. And he proceeds with the healing of this man. This man didn't ask to be healed. He didn't even know that he was going to be healed. He had been perhaps going to that same area for years, begging. We know that Jews had a strict code between clean and unclean, and so this man would have been considered unclean. If people viewed him as somehow sinful because he was blind, he would not have been included in anything, and he would have had to beg to survive. Even though the man will gain his eyesight in this miracle, his healing is a process. Jesus could have instantly healed him like he has before. We've seen examples of that. But he doesn't do that here. He puts some mud, and imagine yourself in that moment. You're just sitting there, close your eyes. Someone walks up to you. And then just touches you. Put their hands on your eyeballs. Huh? What happened? What's going on? And then a voice says, go. Wash in the pool. Why is this pool significant? This pool, we actually have a picture of this pool. It's the Pool of Siloam. This was discovered by archaeologists. And this pool was fed by a spring outside of Jerusalem. It was perhaps built by Hezekiah, one of the kings that we'll study later this fall. And this pool was where they got the water. And during the Feast of Tabernacles, they would take this water and bring it into the temple and pour it out as an offering. This was considered holy, sacred water, special water. What does Jesus do? He sends an unclean man into this pool to wash himself clean. And it doesn't take us very far to imagine the waters of baptism. And we can go on and on about that. It's very significant. Jesus sends this man here, and that pool means sent, just as Jesus has been sent. With his newfound sight, he shares his story, and the people who know him ask, how can you see? What happened? And here we see the first step of growing insight that this man displays. Number one, he sees Jesus as a man. Verse 11. Now, it doesn't seem very significant to us, but this man, named Jesus, as he calls him, has gotten his attention. He has not seen him, because when he returns, Jesus is gone. He doesn't know what he looks like. He just knows that this man put some mud on my eyes, and now I can see. He's made a profound impact in his life, and he's not even sure who he is, other than pretty sure he's a man, and I think his name is Jesus. And for some reason, he listened to Jesus' instructions. He's got this mud on his eyes, and then he goes and washes, and he can see. For this man who has not even seen Jesus, he acknowledges that this is what this man has done for me. He told me to do this, I did it, and now I can see. He's not making this miracle up, and yet others are skeptical. Let's read part 2, verses 13 through 23. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. We're kind of wondering why, and then we immediately understand why. Now the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Uh-oh, we know what that means. Somebody's about to get in trouble. Therefore the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He put mud on my eyes, the man replied, and I washed, and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God. This man, meaning Jesus, is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others asked, how can a sinner perform such signs? So they were divided. Even the Pharisees couldn't agree. Then they turned again to the blind man. What have you to say about him? It was your eyes he opened. The man replied, he is a prophet. They still did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they sent for this man's parents. Is this your son? They asked. Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that he can now see? Answer us these three questions. Verse 20, we know he is our son, the parents answered, and we know he was born blind, but how he can now see now, or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. He's of age. He will speak for himself. It's like they're doing this. Not our problem. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders, who already had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. Put out is actually, it should be a stronger word, cast out of the synagogue. That was why his parents said, he is of age, ask him. Once again, we see the Sabbath police on a stakeout, waiting to catch someone in the act. You broke the Sabbath, you broke the law, you cannot be of God. Now, while the Pharisees get a bad rap, and deservedly so most of the time, they were the most influential, important religious and political party in Jesus' day. People did not want to upset them. They held great power. And while some of them would relish this opportunity to try to catch Jesus in the act, to discredit him as sinful and therefore not from God, you know, he broke God's law, some were sympathetic to Jesus. And just like groups today, they could not agree. There were divisions among them. When they ask the man what he has to say about it, remember, these are the most learned people in probably all of Israel in terms of book learnings. They ask this blind man, who hadn't received any formal training, for his opinion. It's kind of ironic that they do this. And this is where we see this next step in the growth of spiritual insight that this man has into Jesus. Second, he sees Jesus as a prophet. We may not grasp the significance of this moment, but when he says these four words, he's pressed in the interrogation. He admits that there is something special about Jesus, that as a prophet, he has some special ability. He's not just any man, but he is able to perform miracles. This man does not have a totally clear view of who Jesus is yet. You know what? That's okay. We often don't either. He's on this process, this journey of growing insight. But he moves one step further. He is a prophet. And that is one of the roles that Jesus has in the Bible. And again, they don't believe him. So they call in his parents, right into the principal's office. They're trying to build this case against Jesus, trying to discredit this man's story of miraculous healing. But the Pharisees' plan backfires as the parents are weak. And they don't want to get in trouble either. So they say, well, we don't know. You should ask our son. He's an adult. He can speak for himself. And they're fearful of the Pharisees. And so they push the responsibility back onto their son. Pretty nice parents. Let me read the next part. Verse 24 through 34. A second time, they summoned the man who had been blind. Give glory to God by telling the truth, they said. We know this man is a sinner. They're talking about Jesus. We know Jesus is a sinner. The man replied, whether he is a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. That's the line that has inspired numerous songs throughout history. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. Then they asked him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? And he answered, I have told you already, and you didn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too? That's the tone that I think this is a snarky statement. I kind of like snarky. He says it in a way that is, they are going to take great offense. You can imagine being there in that moment, and everyone's like, he said what? Do you want to become his disciples too? How did these leaders respond? Then they hurled insults at him and said, you are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from. The man answered, now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. This guy is leading them through a whole argument. Man, he is showing them how to debate. We know that God doesn't listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. To this they replied, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. Whew. Kind of makes your blood boil a little bit. They threw him out. When it says they hurled insults, this is the word that is, it's far more intense. It is, they slandered him grievously. They said all sorts of vile things to him. When this word shows up a few other times in the Bible, it's always in the context of what we are never supposed to do. In fact, later on in the New Testament, it will say, have nothing to do with people who act that way, who behave that way. They are not of God. The Pharisees have just condemned themselves and shown what is really in their heart. One thing I know, I was blind, and now I see. This is where the man has taken a third step in this journey. He sees Jesus as sent from God. Verse 33, if this man were not from God, he could do nothing. See, he starts out by seeing Jesus as just a guy, a man. Then he acknowledges he's a prophet. He has some sort of special ability. Now he comes to this place, and he's doing this while he's under fire. He's facing the intense persecution and interrogation of the most powerful people in the land at this time. And he doesn't waver at all, and he doesn't know much at all. What strength to say this man must be sent from God. If not from God, he could do nothing. This, predictably, enrages those leaders. They prided themselves on their superior knowledge and ability to debate religious matters. But with this acknowledgement that Jesus must be sent from God, this man shows that for all the knowledge those Pharisees have, they have not wisdom. They have not understanding. They have no spiritual insight. If anything, they are spiritually bankrupt. and they throw him out for it. They slander him in the process. Out you go, they said to the man who outthought them. You aren't welcome in our community. And for a Jew to be cast out of your local synagogue was the ultimate betrayal. You were considered not part of the community anymore. You would have been ostracized. You were blacklisted forever. This is not a good thing. And this is the rejection that Jesus immediately becomes aware of. And this is where we see the ultimate character of God that Jesus displayed. That anyone the world rejects, Jesus will go to, will seek them out and find them and welcome them. And church, that is what he's calling us to do as well today. Amen. We should not be known for what we are against, but what we are for. And that is Jesus. This will lead to the final step of insight for this man. Let me read the last few verses, verse 35 to 41. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, and when he found them, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" "Who is he, sir?" the man asked. "Tell me so that I may believe in him." Jesus said, remember, he has not seen Jesus. He doesn't know who Jesus is at this point. Jesus said, "You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you." Then the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. I get kind of goosebumps from that line. You know, this is one of the only times that John actually uses this particular phrase, that someone worshiped Jesus. John has been very careful up to this point as he's writing to sort of parcel out Jesus' true identity. And here it gets no more explicit. It's just, this is who Jesus is. He is God, worthy of worship. Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, "What? Are we blind too?" You like that tone? Jesus said, "If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains." This man finally sees Jesus with his own eyes, and this is his fourth step. He sees Jesus as the Son of God. It's this whole healing journey that he has been on. And not only does he see Jesus as the Son of God, but he responds with his belief. It's the ultimate act of faith. "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. He saw Jesus as the one that they had been hoping for so long, sent by God to heal, restore, and save all who would come to believe. Even this man who was considered unclean and an outcast. It's a remarkable journey from being unable to see with his own eyes to finally seeing Jesus for the very first time and believing in him. Jesus accepts him, and he shows the world that this man is the one who truly sees. He has the spiritual insight that is needed and necessary to follow him, while the Pharisees are the ones who are in fact blind. They claim to see, but they do not, because they have rejected the Son of God. This is a story that ultimately speaks to each of us, because this is a journey that each of us are on and each of us must take. Apart from or until we encounter Jesus, we are blind. And the encounter with Jesus, when you see him for the very first time, will always require a choice to receive him or reject him. It's actually one of the very few binary choices of Jesus that we see in the Bible. You either believe in him or you don't. You know, there's a whole lot of other issues where there is gray area, but not in this. Rejecting is a choice to remain blind and walk in the dark. Receiving is a choice to see at last and walk in the light. This is that choice that we're faced with at some point in your life and that we continue to face every single day. This man had received his physical sight, and then Jesus sees him, and then he sees Jesus, and then he asks him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And the man says, "Tell me, I want to believe." And he makes a choice, and in that choice, his journey is made complete. Able to see, this man is free for the very first time in his life. What Jesus offered to him, he also offers to you. A choice to come out of the darkness and walk with God in the light. What blindness is Jesus seeking to heal in you? Maybe it's that thing that you resist. Or it's that situation that makes you want to clench your fist. Perhaps it's that place of stubbornness that exists. Or it could be that person you find easy to dismiss. You see, friends, we are all prone to blindness. And the particular blindness that you may have at any stage of this journey is the very condition that will keep your eyes unfocused and unable to see the amazing path that God has you on already and has in store for you as you walk out those doors today. Blindness says you're no good. Blindness wants to cast you out. Blindness wants you to wander aimlessly. Blindness wants you to listen to those distracting or competing voices in your life. That is not what freedom feels like, my friends. And freedom is what Christ offers you. Come into the light, and you will be free. Right now, in this very moment, I want you to close your eyes. I want you to listen to the voice of the Lord. This is the same voice who directs us, who heals us, who has all power, and who will empower us through a word and through the word. How will your restored sight lead you to respond to Christ in this next season of life? I promise you, it's an amazing journey. And you never really know the depths of wonders that await as you step again into the light of God. Will you pray with me and let's give thanks to God? God, I pray for this group of people this morning. That as you have healed our eyes and opened them to your wonders anew, our prayer is that you would restore our sight and allow us to respond to you in the ways that you are calling us to today, tomorrow, and in this season of life. For where you open eyes, you do not lead astray. The insight that you give is never wrong. We might mess up the timing, but you will lead us forward. Will you bless this group of people? Will you inspire us to see as you see? Will you make us free once again? We pray this in the strong and powerful name of Jesus. The name above all names. Amen.